This is the Tank Podcast for the 8th of October, 2007.
Good afternoon, Richard. How are you?
Stefan, hello. This is the new tank.
It's the new tank. It's bigger, it's better, it's brighter.
And it's visual. Beautiful. It's visual.
I know. I can't believe it. I can actually see something.
This is our first tank vodcast.
First tank vodcast. Actually, it's a vod podcast.
Vod podcast.
It's in other words, podcast. It's
if you're listening to this as an MP3 via the standard way, great. Listen to us. I hope we have a good show for you. But you can also go to YouTube, type in Tank Podcast in the search, and see us as we do it. Yeah.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Yeah, so we're sort of multimediaing a bit here today. And it's, as you step into the new millennium a little bit further.
A little bit further. Because we've been here for a while now.
A bit closer to Armageddon today than we were yesterday. And technology sort of climbing up as doomsday is sort of going down. So it's all coming together nicely.
It's all happening.
It's all fantastic. Happening.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, just carry on, Richard.
Carry on. It's been a big time. A big time in the skeptics field. Those of you who heard the last episode of The Tank would have heard about my report about the amazing cruise up the coast of Alaska.
That was fantastic.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun. I enjoyed that.
How did you manage to wangle that one? That's just phenomenal.
I don't know. I just sort of went and there I was.
There you were.
I got on this plane and I flew to Alaska and next thing I know I'm on a cruise.
And they actually let you in with your passport and everything?
They did. And a $50 bribe.
That's amazing.
I had a wonderful time. And one of the things I did on the cruise was I was making lots of origami, as I do.
You can't help yourself.
I can't help myself. And I promised James Randi I would invent for him a paper Pigasus. Pigasus being the flying pig.
Yes, of course.
And
we all know about that one.
Hold that up. If you're watching this, you'll be able to see.
Look at that.
In fact, if you take it in that direction, it's flying towards the camera now, those of you who are watching this.
Pigs can't fly that well.
All right. Okay. There it is. That's Paper Pigasus. Now, we've got a competition. If you go to YouTube and type Pigasus or James Randi, you'll find the video instructions on how to fold. And here's another one.
One of those.
A Paper Pigasus. Now, if you fold one and take an interesting photograph of Pegasus. Oh, I don't know, going shopping, having a swim.
Flying.
maybe having a drive in a car in an exotic location.
Yes. Mating.
With
a butterfly.
Yes, that would be an interesting result.
Good.
Don't even know what I'm saying. Now, if you do that and send the photograph to cosmicspoon@gmail.com, there it is. You can see it.
I can see
it. You can see it.
It's right there.
CosmicSpoon@gmail.com. The most creative entry we receive in the next week or so, we'll send you
our lovely autographed.
The tank autographed Pigasus.
Yes.
I sent some little Pigasus, whatever you call them, off to a good friend of mine, Kitty, who was on the amazing cruise with us. And she sent me back, can you believe it, Pop Rocks.
Phenomenal.
So, just for you, Kitty, we're going to open these here live on the tank. Let's go.
This is going to be fun. Yep. What are we going to eat these things or what?
That's for the people listening. That's what they sound like. Well, you sort of dump them all into your mouth.
That's what they look like.
For those people watching, that's what they look like. For those people listening, this is what they sound like. So this is what you do. You put them on your hand. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put them straight in my mouth.
Really? Yeah, microphone.
Wow.
Wow.
They're good.
That's disgusting. Wow. That's totally disgusting.
Thanks, Kitty. Pop Rock. Wow. Who's that looking over there?
Is there a doctor in the house?
Delightful.
Delightful. Thank you, Kitty.
Thank you, Kitty.
Phenomenal.
This reminds me of my friend Phil Plate, the bad astronomer. He loves Minties.
Oh, yeah.
And he can't get Minties in the States, so every now and then I send him a little...
A pack of Minties.
Oh, these are popping all over my mouth.
They're exploding. If these were brought out in the 1800s, they probably would have been seen as a cure for cancer or for consumption.
Or witchcraft. I think they're witchcraft.
Or the humours.
That was funny. Thank you very much. Now, a good show today.
Yeah, it's going to be an excellent show.
An excellent show. We have an interview lined up. Let me make some more of these.
Still exploding.
is a bloke called Jason Cook.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jason Cook is at Griffith University up in Queensland, mm-hmm. on the Gold Coast. He started a group called the Griffith University Society for Skeptics and...
Yes, carry on. I'm just having a
thank
couple,
you.
Couple of
Skeptics and Free Thinkers, or...
Oh, yeah.
Gusf, for short.
Okay.
Which is www.gussf.org.
Hmm.
I'm going to be talking to him in a moment, see what he's up to and his group's up to, a band there of young... Oh, young to us. Everyone's young to us.
Skeptics?
Skeptics. Starting up a university movement here in Australia.
Excellent.
For skepticism.
We need that. We need that because I believe there's a lot of anti-skeptics moving into the universities now. And they've got, actually, you get a PhD in palm reading now.
Oh, I want one. Yeah. I want one.
In fact, I'm working on a PhD in pop rock reading.
Oh, are you? Oh,
yeah.
I'm
just going to have another reading right now.
Have another reading right now. While you're reading your pop rocks, I'll say that... Their aim, the GUSSF. Oh, you're having visions? Their aim is to vanquish pseudoscience and vindicate skepticism.
Wow.
Can't get better than that.
Vindicate skepticism.
That's
fabulous.
All right. Well, while you're popping around in your pop rocks, having visions, we'll get on to the rest of the show and we'll see you at the end of the show.
Fabulous. And thanks for watching.
Australian skeptics were delighted recently to learn of the formation of a new group, the Griffith University Society for Skeptics and Free Thinkers. Griffith University being situated on the Gold Coast in the Sunshine State of Queensland. I recently spoke to its founder, Jason Cook.
And on the line now from the Gold Coast in Queensland, we've got Jason Cook. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me.
No, not a problem. Now, I really want to hear all about what you're doing there in Griffith University. What got you started in all this?
Okay. There wasn't any sort of group, a critical thinking, skeptically themed group on our campus, for starters. But then I looked into it a bit, and there wasn't actually any on any campus throughout Australia. I did a bit of research, and in America and several places overseas, there's groups in colleges and in universities, even some high schools, where they get together and compare notes and critical thinking and just discussing what's happening. And it sounded like a good idea. And yeah, for some reason, I got motivated to do it.
You got motivated to do it. What was your motivation? Was it just because no one else had done it, or... You've obviously been reading up on the subject.
Yeah, well, I've been reading up on the subject for years and years now, probably 6 to 7 years at least. And it's just something that I wanted to do, but I probably would have preferred to join a group. I never thought that I would actually be starting a group on my own. But then I met other people on campus who had similar ideas and were in the same boat. They would love to... join a group as opposed to forming one, but it wasn't overly difficult. It was instantly rewarding. There was instant gratification, which made it seem almost effortless, in hindsight.
So you found lots of like-minded people, because I know on university campuses all around the world, there are, students get into groups and interest areas and things like that. So I guess you're used to seeing all sorts of strange and interesting interest groups on your own your own university.
Well, not so much at my campus, but at other campuses I've been to, definitely you always see different cultural clubs and political groups or different affiliations. But on my campus, there wasn't there that much of a cultural aspect in that direction. There was a lot of sporting clubs. And then there was the role-playing club.
Yeah.
But that's really as far as it went. And then different clubs, depending on the subject, like a psychology club and a theatre group. But nothing really that wasn't completely subject-oriented or sporting or a game or something. Just a lack there, just a gaping need for something. And I thought we'd fill that need, which we have done, luckily enough.
And what was the initial reaction to people at the university when you started to promote this?
I think initially people weren't really sure what we were doing. I had a lot of people, this was really strange, thinking that we were promoting the paranormal, some sort of UFO group. I had a friend actually say, why are you starting a UFO group? I know you don't believe in any of that. initially I thought that was an isolated case, but yeah, lots of people completely took it in the complete opposite direction. And lots of people, yeah, just weren't sure of what we were or what we were doing, or I don't know, or thought we were going to pick on people. Which is good because now it's good because people are saying what we actually do and that it's not a negative thing, that it is a good thing, that it is, you know, actually helping people and being supportive of groups, and that the science faculty are really pleased.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, definitely. Well, anything that gets people, you know, interested and excited about science.
Now, you actually took your group to a talk by Thomas Woodward, wasn't it? The man who was talking about intelligent design. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
He came and gave a talk actually at my campus, at Griffith Gold Coast campus, which was really strange because I guess a lot of people assume that it's an American phenomenon or that it's something that happens in churches and that sort of thing. But so for it to be on a university campus was strange enough in itself, but for it to be, you know, my university campus, posters up in the hallways for intelligent design. And no one seemed to really know what intelligent design was. Obviously the people who organized it did, from their perspective, but no one else really seemed to know what was going on and what was happening. So I went along to that, thinking that I would be the only person there going along, you know, not completely, I would say, open-minded and not completely uninformed of what intelligent design is, what they are actually saying. But yeah, it turned out to be really interesting. There were quite a few people on campus who were just as worried about this and just as concerned as I was. There were people actually putting up flyers around campus of the Australian Science Council's stance on intelligent design. So they were putting flyers up around campus completely independently of me. Everyone assumed it was me doing it, and I didn't even know what was going on. At the end of the talk, the intelligent design lecture, which went for about an hour, there was supposed to be a question and answer time. Of course, the question and answer time got cancelled because they ran out of time.
Oh, what a shock.
Yeah, I've heard it happens all the time. I wasn't overly surprised. But, of course, it was the university's fault because they hadn't booked the room properly. So we ended up having a Q&A session in the foyer of the lecture theatre.
Oh, wow.
Which went for about an hour and a half, whereas the actual talk went for slightly less than an hour. And that was great. It was really good. I thought it would just be me because I stood up and said I was informed there'd be a question and answer session. And then, yeah, there was about 30 people all came along with me to find out, you know, why he didn't explain certain things in the talk. And it was very much the typical talk, very, very light on facts and very, very heavy with rhetoric and making fun of all aspects of science, whether it's Darwin physicists sitting at their computers doing their numbers and ignoring the real world, that sort of thrown in comment everywhere, and really, really appealing to the audience, which was the mostly the Griffith Christian students.
Now, that's an interesting aspect. It doesn't surprise me. I think every university has various religious groups on it, and depending on the country, of course, in a country like Australia, you're going to get more Christian groups, I would imagine. Here in Sydney, I think some universities have quite a strong Islamic group within them, which is not surprising because there's lots of Islamic people would be attending. Have you had any comment from those sort of people about what you're doing?
Well, after the intelligent design talk, I met with the Griffith Christian students. They ended up, it turned out that they were approached by Thomas Woodward's people to give the talk. They didn't really know much about it either. And they were as disappointed as I was. And so I've been meeting with them once a week ever since then. So every week I meet with a group of Christian students and we have a big discussion about evidence-based thinking, critical thinking, and that what is actually happening with intelligent design. They were under the impression that science was ganging up on religious bodies and trying to get theology not taught in religious schools in a theological classroom, as opposed to just keeping science taught in a science classroom.
Right.
They thought that the scientists were trying to get intelligent design or creationism, and they were more from the creationist field, obviously, that wasn't to be taught in a theology classroom. That's what they thought, that it was a big conspiracy with the scientists. So I was explaining to them that it's just that science should be taught in a science classroom, just like English should be taught in an English classroom, geography and so on. And they were completely unaware of that, which I'd never thought of.
That doesn't surprise me too much, because it's people like you and I and a lot of other skeptics out there keep abreast of all these sort of ideas and movements throughout the world and what's being taught where and when and what. And I think for a lot of the general public and other groups, it doesn't come into their mind so much.
Yeah, I guess I've never considered it. But yeah, it was really interesting. Particularly, I would think that from their perspective, they're a group that isn't involved in this, or at least was enough that they would have a speaker from America come and give a talk about something that they didn't really know very much about.
So, Jason, what have you found has helped you in your little crusade up there on the Gold Coast? Have you been using book material or videos, or what helps you to, I don't know, get the message across to people about skepticism?
I think it really, a lot of it's just talking to people. Once people come to a meeting or once they're in a room, then we can play videos. We've got, you know, YouTube, Penn and Teller, Richard Dawkins' new movie. We can play videos then or show books, which I've got lots and lots of books. But the biggest thing I think is just talking to people, just getting them interested enough that they will come to a meeting or, because I think a lot of people do think about these things, not all the time, but everyone's had a thought where they've gone, oh, I'm not sure about that, or that doesn't sound right, or really based on their own intuition or their own experiences. But everyone's encountered something that they've had doubts about. Everyone has their own superstitions and that sort of thing, but at the same time, everyone's critical of everyone else's superstitions. So I really think just having examples, just putting across examples of things, and everyone can relate to something.
Have you seen the Carl Sagan series Cosmos?
I haven't, no. I've heard about it so much, and I haven't actually seen it.
But, Jason, if you can find that, and I know it's available on DVD from, I think it's carlsagan.com, but if you type in Cosmos DVD into Google, you'll certainly find it. It is one of the best series on science ever made, and it still holds up after all these years. And he talks a lot about skepticism and the scientific method, and it's absorbing, absolutely absorbing. But yeah, it's things like that I've found has helped a lot. I've got a wealth of video material I've been collecting over the years, and I'll have to shoot you up some extra bits and pieces.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
And the books of James Randi, of course, are invaluable. I don't know if you've...
Yeah, definitely. I've got a couple of Randi's books.
Yep.
And I've got a couple of Sagan books as well. The Demon Haunted World, that's just great.
That's one of the best, yeah. Have you read Flim Flam, the James Randi book?
I have read it. I got it from the library, though. I don't actually have it.
Ah, right. Yeah, I mean, again, and to everybody listening, Flim Flam is one of the foundation pieces of modern skepticism. It should be on everybody's shelf, together with The Demon Haunted World. I think one of the best... For me, one of the best books Randi wrote, it's called The Faith Healers. So that's a very strong motivational book, I think.
Definitely. Well, I've used that just discussing all the faith healers and aspects of alternative medicine. Going from, say, talking about Bigfoot or the Yowie and UFOs and all the funny stuff, and then and saying how but the same sort of thinking can lead to faith healing, to, you know, stuff that is definitely obviously harmful to people, that the people are, you know, getting harmed by, whether financially or physically or mentally as well. And just showing the comparisons between, say, believing in ghosts to believing that your spirit is being healed by this man if you give him enough money.
That's right. That's pretty sad. And I've been to outside, I should say, to a Benny Hinn event here in Sydney, where there are thousands of people, many of whom in wheelchairs and crutches and things, who couldn't even get in, and they've travelled from great long distances. And it's tempting to just to stand up on a soapbox and start saying to the people, look, this is, you're all being fooled, it's all a big con, but of course it doesn't quite work that way. It's one of the sadder aspects of what we investigate when we see things like that. But anyway, now if there are other people out there listening in universities around Australia, you may very well be the man for them to write to in order for them to get some advice. What should they do? Should they just simply email you?
Yeah, anyone's welcome to email me or leave a message on, we've got a website now, as well as the MySpace group, which is more of a discussion board. It's become more of a discussion board now we've got the website.
Now, your website, of course, is www.gussf.org.
That's it, yep.
And for those people...
University, Society for Skeptics and Freethinkers.
For those people watching this, I'll just... You'll notice that the website's there up on the screen. So that would be great. So you might have just the advice for people out there who are interested in starting their own group on their own campus. How many people do you have there helping you out?
We've got over 40 now, actually, which we were aiming for 10. So we were really pleased. We had to get more than 10 for the group to be official, and there started off being 3 of us. So, and that's just in a matter of months as well.
All right, Jason, that's fantastic. I'm really pleased that you've gotten motivated and you're helping to helping to have a lot of fun with us all in the skeptical world.
Exactly.
Thanks, Jason.
No, thank you.
Hi, this is Phil Plait from BadAstronomy.com, and when I'm not dynamiting monuments and faces on Mars, I'm listening to The Tank.
Karen Stolzner from the New South Wales branch of the Australian Skeptics has spent the last 3 years in the Bay Area of the United States. On a recent visit back to Australia, I took the opportunity to talk to her and some other members of the Skeptics Committee.
Well, I'm here in Skeptics in the Pub in Sydney, and we're a day early, but that's okay. We're here because it's a nice quiet room, thank goodness. I'm here with Philip Peters, Karen Stolzner, the welcome visitor, and Dr. Reverend Professor Ian Bryce, who's running for the Senate. Ian, you're running for the Senate. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. A lot of us were rather upset by the John Howard praying for rain and things like that as his solution to climate change, and we thought that to represent the 23% of Australians who are non-religious, we should form a new political party, hence the secular party, based on freedom from religion. And we're planning to run 12 candidates in the Senate in this federal election in about November this year. So we're all spring-loaded and ready to go.
Now, Karen, what do you think of this idea of the skeptic community maybe getting more involved with politics?
I think it's an interesting idea. I think it's of relevance in Australia. I've spent the last 3 years in the United States, and so it's of particular relevance there, where there's a higher portion of religious people. I think as skeptics, with the Australian skeptics anyway, we tend to distance ourselves from atheism as being a different philosophy. But I think that many skeptics would like to become involved in this movement and would want to participate in this. I think it is of relevance to us.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think we should separate them somewhat. They are, in a way, two different areas. Where I think a skepticism is the more broadly examining pseudoscientific claims, alternative medicine claims, ghost hunting, that sort of thing. Whereas it's a little bit more, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, a little bit more hardcore to go down this sort of track.
Well, I think that atheism is very specific, a specific way of thinking. Skepticism is a lot broader. It's a philosophy in many ways rather than being an alternative to religious beliefs. So they're different things, but there is a lot of crossover, of course. There's a lot of overlapping. A lot of skeptics are naturally atheists or agnostics.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Now, you of course, have been a committee member on the Australian Skeptics for, 10 years?
Yes, 10 years now, and so I've been an investigator for the Australian Skeptics for 10 years.
But, of course, for the last three and a half years or whatever it is, you've been living in the Bay Area.
Yes,
but
San
still,
Francisco?
San Francisco, still on our committee, but living in the Bay Area.
Yes, an emeritus member of the committee, so I still participate as much as is possible from a distance.
From a distance, but we all still enjoy reading your articles in the magazine.
Thank you.
You must, I mean, I enjoy it when I go out on investigations, but you living in the States, there must be a wealth of things for you to investigate.
Absolutely, there are just so many crazy things taking place and so many haunted houses and just lots of paranormal activity reputedly taking place in California. Throughout the States, it's very popular at the moment.
Now, Philip, do you think that we here left in Australia, we should be a bit more active, don't you think, getting out there and looking for some more ghosts?
It would be a lot more fun if we did, but the good thing is that we don't seem to need to the way it is in America. And all I know of America is what we see on TV and the magazines, and it seems that everyone's out there to get a buck no matter what the method. But in Australia, it doesn't seem quite so ruthless. I mean, I know there's plenty of ghost hunters, good tours and bad tours, and the best ones are really into it as a way to teach something about local history. But I don't see as much abuse of the paranormal in Australia, so maybe we don't need to be as vigilant as we are in America.
That's an interesting expression, abuse of the paranormal. The exploitation, do you mean?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the paranormal is folklore. That's how you perceive it, as history, as storytelling and narrative. Yeah. But I think Philip's particular interest is cryptozoology.
Oh, yes, tell us the latest news on the pussycats.
It's just that living in Campbelltown, we're surrounded by all sorts of things. Like, we're coming up to the Festival of Vicious Ghost. And it's the only very big thing that's ever happened in Campbelltown. It's what's put Australia on the map internationally for ghost hunters. But this cryptozoology is just that the local paper one day had a lot of articles about panther sightings, and it kind of went unnoticed until I decided to know. I noticed that everything happened on the same day, the same paper, and I started to investigate that and found that it was not a coincidence that all these articles had a common thread, and finally was able to find out what it was all about.
Okay.
It's also just a good excuse for me to get out.
I agree. I personally, I love getting out there and getting my hands dirty. Ian, I know you've been on many investigations on behalf of the Australian Skeptics. Do you, like me, do you actually really enjoy doing that?
Well, I used to enjoy it a fair bit in past decades, I suppose. I still enjoy it, but I'm a bit sad at never having found anything that remotely stands up to scientific investigation. So I must admit it's slightly deflating when we test some psychic and they just fall completely flat.
Ian's work is very different to mine. He's the challenge investigator, so he adopts the scientific method in what he does. And I guess I do to some extent, but really I go out there and experience things and write about them and write about the folklore and the history. But Ian's really testing. He's out there testing these things. And we have claimants who come forward and put forward claims, and Ian investigates that. So he's really scientific about everything that he does. It's different.
Oh, somebody has to be scientific around here. Thank you, committee members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that was a great show, wasn't it? Wasn't that guy interesting?
Phenomenal.
How's your pop rocking?
They're still popping.
They're still after all this time.
I haven't had one for about 4 hours, and they're still popping.
That's incredible.
Crazy. And the show wasn't even 4 hours long.
It, what? I can't even.
Was it?
I can't get my brain around that one.
It seems like eternal. It seems like time stood still there while we're talking to our friends.
I think it did. Well, thank you for listening or watching this podcast.
It's been fantastic. It's great to be here in the new millennium as we celebrate this multi-digital media thing that we call life.
Life. Or the tank. Which are one in the same thing.
Life in the tank.
I think life in the tank. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you. We'll see you, or you'll see us next week. Or, no, in 2 weeks' time.
We'll see you if you post a response to us. Then we'll see you, and you'll see us, and we'll all see each other.
That's incredible. Oh, don't forget, Pegasus, from the beginning of the show, Paper Pegasus, has its own fan site on Facebook.
Is that right?
So check out Origami Pegasus on Facebook.
Can Wombat join?
And Wombat can join, too.
Can Wombat join?
See you, Steph.
Bye.
You have been listening to the Tank Podcast. Produced in sunny Sydney, Australia by the Mystery Investigators, the Sirius Media Group, and Australian Skeptics. You can email us at cosmicspoon@gmail.com.